Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Hello, this is Michael reading this week's San Angelo Standard Times. These readings are for the week of Sunday, June 28th. I am doing these readings on Thursday, July 2nd. And as always, we'll begin with the most recent articles and progressively work our way back during the week. July 2nd, San Angelo, Tom Green County, sees 40 new positive COVID-19 cases, 29 hospitalized, from staff reports. Testing for the coronavirus in Tom Green County began February 29th. This article will be updated daily with information provided by the San Angelo Tom Green County Health Department via the City of San Angelo and state information from the Texas Department of State Health Services. Tom Green County, July 2nd. 463 positive cases reported. 40 new positive cases. 256 patients being monitored. 2 deaths. 26 currently hospitalized. Here's what you can and can't do in San Angelo areas this 4th of July, by Rosanna Aguilera. With COVID-19 still present in San Angelo and surrounding areas, 4th of July events are being canceled, but not all of them. Here's what is still planned in this area. Lake Nasworthy Fireworks Show. The Lake Nasworthy Homeowners Association announced it would push ahead with the July 4th fireworks show at 9:30 p.m. Fireworks are launched from the dam across from Goodfellow Recreation Camp. Officials with the Lake Nasworthy HOA asked attendees to treat the show like an old-time drive-in movie theater, to stay in their car or sit on the tailgate, and to avoid large groups of people. Personal fireworks are not allowed in city limits, which includes Lake Nasworthy. Twin Buttes Reservoir. As of June 30th, the site is still open for all activities to include boating and camping, according to a Facebook post. The reservoir does not have any common areas, such as restrooms. Due to the expected visitor increase, additional law enforcement personnel has been planned to conduct highly visible patrols throughout the holiday weekend. Fireworks are prohibited, and appropriate citations will be issued to violators. Big Lake Fireworks. Though the annual Star Spangled Celebration in Big Lake has been canceled for July 4th, the 30-minute fireworks show is still scheduled at North Park as long as attendees remain in their vehicles, according to the Big Lake Wildcat. Anyone interested in sponsoring the fireworks may do so by calling Loretta Epperson at 325-884-2980. Cristobal Celebration. Run, bike, walk, or kayak 5K and 1 mile fun run is from 7:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. A barbecue lunch is from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Cristobal Park. A fireworks show will be at the park, set up in the high school parking lot. July 4th cancellation and closures. Tom Green County Public Parks. Several Tom Green County public parks outside San Angelo will be closed ahead of the July 4th weekend, according to a news release. Beginning 8 p.m. July 2nd until 8 a.m. July 13th, the following parks will be closed: Foster Park, Pew Park, Mineral Wells Crossing on Mineral Wells Road just south of Cristobal at the South Concho River, Causeway and or Low Water Crossing at Loop 110 in Cristobal. Ballinger Fireworks, Kimball County. All July events hosted by the Chamber of Commerce are canceled, including the annual fireworks show. San Angelo man indicted in child endangerment case after DWI with 4-year-old, by Elena Edgen. A San Angelo man has been indicted a year after he was found driving the wrong way on U.S. Highway 87 with a 4-year-old child in the vehicle, according to court documents. Just before 6 p.m., June 14, 2019, a Texas Department of Public Safety trooper noticed a 2015 GMC Sierra pickup driving the wrong way on US 87 in Tom Green County. The trooper conducted a traffic stop and could smell alcohol on the driver's breath, records state. The driver told the trooper he had taken muscle relaxers earlier, and the trooper believed he was intoxicated, according to the trooper's report. DPS arrested Robert Wayne Massengill, 64, on charges of driving while intoxicated with children younger than 15 years old and endangering child criminal negligence. He was released from Tom Green County Jail the next day on a $15,000 bond. An indictment filed June 18, 2020, charged Massengill with endangering child criminal negligence, a state jail felony punishable by up to 2 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Drive-through COVID testing in San Angelo, What to Expect, a First-Hand Account, by Bill Hancock, Runnels County Register. I arrived at the location 1 hour early, at 8 a.m. I was the eighth vehicle in line. There is no waiting in the parking lot before testing opens, so the vehicles line up along Tuig Street. Within 10 minutes of my arrival, the line of vehicles had already rounded the corner onto Magdalen Street and was growing by the minute. If you don't get there at least an hour early, you're likely to be in a line that will take you a couple of hours or more to get to the actual testing area. At about 8:30 a.m., the Shannon techs and nurses descend on the parking lot, where traffic cones mark lanes to the pop-up canopies, where pre-screening and testing are conducted. By the time they opened at 9 a.m., the line of vehicles was down East Tuig Street to Magdalen Street and down Magdalen Street to East Beauregard Avenue. Many of the vehicles had more than one person in them, so even though there might only be 10 vehicles in front of you, there could be 20 or more people in those 10 vehicles. Of the 7 vehicles in front of me, about half had more than one person inside. The parking lot was opened at 9:05 a.m., and we began slowly snaking our way into the serpentine lanes. By 9:27 a.m., I had still not made it to the first stop in the testing process. Only 3 vehicles had been pre-screened by that point, but as I said above, there were vehicles with more than one person inside. At 9:29 a.m., I was at the first canopied area, the pre-screening where a nurse takes your temperature and places an oximeter on your finger to get your oxygen saturation level and pulse. This is where they take your basic information and write it on their screening form. This pit stop takes only about 2 minutes, but the line wasn't moving at this point because the next 2 vehicles were more lengthy and those vehicles in front of me were still stopped. I asked the nurse at my pit stop how many tests they were doing every day. She said, "When we started, we were doing about 30 tests a day. Now we're doing over 180 tests per day." Once she finishes the questions, she takes the form, folds it in half, and places it under my windshield wiper. At 9:36 a.m., the line progressed, and another nurse took the piece of paper from under my windshield and talked to me about any possible exposure. 10 minutes later, at 9:46 a.m., I'm at the second canopied area where more detailed questions are asked by a nurse, including the names of anyone I may have had contact with who had tested positive for COVID-19. Once that step is completed, another nurse comes out of an adjacent building and has a cotton swab on an unnervingly long stick. She tells me that she is going to stick it in my nose for 15 seconds. I'm sure she saw the surprise in my eyes and has probably seen that same surprised look a couple of thousand times. She sticks the swab in my nose and starts counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way to 15. I was trying to use some kind of Jedi mind control to get her to suddenly skip from 5 to 15, but it didn't work. The test wasn't painful, just somewhat disconcerting. The nurse said that it takes 7 to 10 days to get the results, but if you're enrolled in the Shannon My Chart application, you can see them online sooner. Otherwise, you have to wait for a call from a Shannon Medical Center nurse to give you the results of the test. At 9:52 a.m., with the testing complete, I pulled out of the parking lot. As I mentioned, I arrived an hour early, so I was at 1 hour, 52 minutes when I finally pulled out of the parking lot. I spent almost an hour in line in the parking lot after testing opened, and that was with 7 vehicles with roughly 10 people in front of me. When I exited, the line of vehicles stretched down East Tuig Street to Magdalen Street and down Magdalen Street to beyond Beauregard Avenue to East Harris Avenue. The test itself isn't bad. Just 15 seconds and you're done. The screeners are quick with their questions and try to keep things moving as quickly and efficiently as possible. The staff spend 8 or 9 hours a day standing in the Texas heat to do these tests. On the day I went, the temperature reached 101 degrees. That arbitrary number doesn't take into account several factors, such as nurses and techs wearing masks, standing in the heat on a black asphalt and concrete parking lot, and working diligently as they breathe in fumes and absorb heat from hundreds of vehicles that drive in and idle around them all day. Where? 110 East Tuig Street, the parking lot behind the Shannon Pharmacy. What you need to know. The drive-through testing location is in the parking lot behind Shannon Pharmacy. You'll have to drive to East Tuig Street from Magdalen Street. The entrance is one way, so the vehicles line up to come in front of the direction of Magdalen. Time, the testing is from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., 7 days a week. For more information, call 325-653-6741. Lake Nasworthy Parks and Beaches will be open July 4th after City Reverses Course by John Tufts. About 48 hours after it announced Lake Nasworthy Parks and Beaches would be closed during the July 4th weekend, the City of San Angelo reversed course Wednesday and will allow parks to be open for Independence Day. On Wednesday, July 1st, the City issued the following release. The Lake Nasworthy Homeowners Association announced Tuesday, June 30th, that it will be moving forward with the annual fireworks show July 4th. In light of this announcement, the City of San Angelo will open certain parks to allow citizens to view the fireworks. These parks will be open from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. The city stresses that every citizen stay home, but we understand wanting to celebrate the national holiday. If you do leave your home to view the fireworks, we strongly ask that you stay in your car and do not congregate with people outside your immediate household. A reminder, private gatherings of 10 or more people and any outdoor gathering of 100 people or more are prohibited per Governor Abbott's orders. Upon learning that the July 4th fireworks show was still scheduled to take place, the San Angelo Police Department continued planning for this event, Police Chief Frank Carter said. Based on the very large crowds that attend this event, the department decided it was in the best interest of public safety if some of the lake parks were opened in order to ensure ingress and egress. This will help aid in access for first responders to all areas of Lake Nasworthy and surrounding areas. It is always the desire of this department that every event is conducted as safely as possible for all members of the community. The city recommends for everyone to stay home this 4th of July to help reduce the spread of COVID-19 in our community and to avoid all gatherings with anyone outside your immediate household. If you decide to go to the lake for the fireworks show, we strongly encourage people to remain in their vehicles. Visitors may watch the fireworks show, but must leave immediately after. The San Angelo Police Department will allow time for visitors to leave before enforcing the 11 p.m. park closures. Camping is also prohibited until July 13th. Middle Concho Park and its boat ramps will not open to the public until July 13th. All other public boat ramps will be open. The Spring Creek, Mary E. Lee, and South Concho Park's restrooms will also be open to the public. A reminder, city parks around Lake Nasworthy are closed until July 13th. Tom Green County Parks will be closed to all activities beginning on July 2nd and ending July 13th. Citizens visiting the lake are encouraged to alert SAPD if they witness any instances of vandalism, reckless behavior, or other unlawful acts in an effort to keep Lake Nasworthy safe, enjoyable, and attractive. Lake Nasworthy Parks that will be open from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. July 4th. Mary E. Lee Beach, 2160 Mary E. Lee Road. South Concho Park, 1608 South Concho Drive. Pecan Creek Park, 8400 Country Club Road. Knickerbocker Park, 6402 Knickerbocker Road. Hillside Drive, 6600 block of Knickerbocker Road. Fish Hatchery Road Park, 3500 block of Country Club Road. Wednesday's announcement reverses an earlier decision by the city. On Monday, officials said the closures were part of the city of San Angelo's effort to slow the spread of COVID-19, according to a news release. The parks and beaches were to be closed at midnight Friday, July 3rd, and would not reopen until July 13th. The San Angelo Symphony has already canceled the annual July 3rd Pops concert and fireworks show, usually hosted at the Bill Ayler Sr. Memorial River Stage. The city's reversal follows a Tuesday announcement by the Lake Nasworthy Homeowners Association, which said it would push forward with plans to hold fireworks at the lake. A spokesperson for the HOA urged residents to maintain social distancing in light of the global pandemic. "We can't stress enough to everyone to please practice the 6-foot social distancing, avoid large gatherings, and stay in your group only," according to the release. Officials with the Lake Nasworthy HOA asked attendees to treat the show like an old drive-in movie theater, to stay in their car or sit on the tailgate, and avoid large groups of people. "Be respectful of others, people's property. Be respectful of our law enforcement. We have a great police department in San Angelo, and they will be out helping with traffic and congestion," the release stated. On Wednesday, the Lake Nasworthy HOA released a list of recommendations they asked those attending July 4th fireworks to follow. A spokesperson with the HOA wrote on Facebook, 1. The lake is inside of city limits. Possessing or using fireworks within 5,000 feet and inside of the San Angelo city limits is a Class C misdemeanor punishable by a maximum fine of $2,000. 2. Pets, especially dogs, can be extremely afraid of fireworks. Please do not bring dogs out to the show. If you live close to the lake, make sure your pet is secured, chipped, and possibly talk to your vet if a medication may be needed for the night. 3. Have a designated driver, period. 4. Take your trash with you when you leave. The Lake Nasworthy HOA and sponsors provide this show for free to the citizens of San Angelo. Please be appreciative and not trash the place out. 5. If parking on a public road, please be safe. Do not block traffic. Keep an eye on children and be patient with all the traffic. 6. Lastly, have a great time. Stay socially distanced. Wear your red, white, and blue. Display your flag. Play the choreographed music and be proud to be an American. Father of woman who died in Cristobal crash forgives teen driver, offers condolences, by John Tufts. The father of a 27-year-old woman who died during a crash outside Cristobal offered his condolences to the family of the other driver, a 19-year-old woman from San Angelo who also died at the crash site. The crash happened on U.S. Highway 277 about 3 miles north of Cristobal at 3:15 a.m., Sunday, June 21st, according to a DPS news release issued Monday. Investigating troopers reported that a 2006 Nissan Pathfinder, driven by Elisa Ashley Glasgow, was traveling south on Highway 277 when a northbound 2014 Fiat 500, driven by Arcelli Faye Marin, crossed the center line and struck the Pathfinder head-on. Troopers had not provided a reason the Fiat's driver crossed the center line as of Friday afternoon. Glasgow's father, Mitch Ellis, arrived at the crash scene, later unaware his daughter was deceased, and gave a heart-rending account on what he felt and saw. "There are no words that can express the emotions that hit me when I realized Elisa was not only gone, but that there was nothing left of my daughter on this earth. She had been physically erased from this world," Ellis stated. Troopers noted both women were wearing seatbelts and that the weather was clear and dry in the area, where the speed limit is 65 miles per hour. On Thursday, June 25th, Ellis expressed anger and heartache through an emotional Facebook post concerning the loss of his daughter, Elisa Glasgow. A grieving dad's rant. "My daughter, Elisa Glasgow, was killed in a car wreck early Father's Day morning, and I am a grieving dad. From the moment Elisa entered the world, she was the true definition of a daddy's girl, and while she was beautiful and feminine, she was also a talented welder and would crawl under the hood of a car with you. She was an important part of our family, and our family is our world. Early Sunday morning, her fiancé showed up in a panic to tell me Elisa had been in a wreck and that it was bad. So I got in his truck and we headed down Highway 277 until we came upon a row of flashing lights. He explained to the deputy who I was, and he told me to wait for the DPS to come talk to me. I could literally feel my legs shaking and my gut turning, and there they left me for over 30 minutes until I couldn't take it anymore and said, 'Arrest me if you will, but I need to find out what's going on.' The deputy said, 'Please, sir, you don't want to walk over there. Let me get the trooper.' Finally, the troopers came and told me my little girl was dead because another vehicle had crossed over, traveling at a very high rate of speed, and hit her head on, and both drivers were dead. Those words being spoken gave the physical feeling of someone ripping my heart out of my chest, and I honestly don't think it was possible to feel any worse, but I was wrong. The officer explained that it was going to be difficult to identify my daughter because there was nothing left to identify. There are no words that can express the emotions that hit me when I realized that Elisa was not only gone, but that there was nothing left of my daughter on this earth. She had been physically erased from this world. Our family would not be able to see her one last time to say goodbye. I had to force myself to accept what was being said in that moment while trying to find some reason in my mind to disprove what they were telling me. My mind then went to the little 6-year-old girl and 4-year-old little boy waiting at my house for their mommy to come and pick them up. How do you tell your grandchildren they will never see their mommy again? They will never feel her touch, be comforted by her hugs and voice. How does a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old comprehend this? The course of their life changed forever in mere seconds. I was so overwhelmed with grief, the one emotion I didn't notice at first was anger. But as the minutes turned into hours, it got louder and louder. The following day, I went to the site of the accident in order to look at it in the daylight hours. I noticed 2 young girls walking around the site, and when I got out, they looked a little nervous. When I told them I was the father of the girl that had been killed, there you could see a heavy sadness come over their eyes as they started to tear up. The girls introduced themselves as the sister and best friend of Araceli, the other driver who perished in the accident. They told me some of the story that led up to the accident. The girls said they had gone to a party in El Dorado that night and that Araceli suddenly left the party. She was heading home and that they were worried about her driving, so they followed behind her and she started driving very fast and began swerving on the road. They panicked and called her over and over, trying to get her to pull over. She would not answer the phone. Then the crash happened. They both teared up and cried, telling me they were sorry and that they really did try to stop her. I would have had to have been a blind man not to notice how much pain they were in. The realization that there was an entire other family and group of friends going through the same pain our family is going through struck me at that moment. I gave both the girls a hug, and my anger was released in this moment. I know Araceli had not done this intentionally, and no malice was involved. It was a terrible, horrible mistake, and she ended up paying the ultimate price for it. I thought back to me, being 19, and how many times I drove home the same way, but by the grace of God, I never had an accident. Then I thought of my dear, sweet daughter I had just lost, and remembered how upset she would be when one of her friends had been mean to her. I remember how upset she would be when a friend had treated her badly, but then 2 hours later, she would be telling me she was going to the movies with the same person that hurt her earlier. And of course, I would ask if it wasn't the same person that was mean to you, and she would give me that huge smile of hers and say, "Yes, Daddy, but you just don't understand what she has going on right now." That was the beauty of Alyssa. She could just look past what someone had done to her and focus on the reason why that person acted out, and then she would devote her energy on helping them solve it. Looking around at all the hate and anger around us now and what it is doing to this country, I knew one of the greatest things I could do to honor her memory is to try and treat people the way Alyssa did. I went home and spoke to my family, and they agreed with the decision I had come to. We publicly wish to say that we forgive Araceli Faye Marin for the mistake that took both their lives, and we want to offer our sincere condolences to her family. I also would like it if this could be forwarded to as many of Alyssa's friends as possible, as a testament that her character still lives on and can even help a grieving dad, and, if possible, to the family of Araceli Faye Marin, so they have the comfort of knowing that no bad or angry thoughts are being cast at their daughter's memory. Thank you for reading my rant, and I appreciate all the love and support that has been given since this terrible tragedy. Araceli Faye Marin's brother, Esteban Marin, expressed his own feelings of loss and what he hoped others would remember about his sister. "My family would just like to have that Araceli was a sweet and gentle soul who loved everyone. She was a God-fearing woman and the perfect daughter and sibling," Marin said. GoFundMe set up for Ellis family. An online fundraiser to assist with funeral costs for the Ellis family has been set up on GoFundMe at https://gf.me/u/YABNDM. Angelo Axe House, scheduled to open in July with BYOB policy, by Rosanna Aguilera. The Angelo Axe House is planning to open its doors in July if COVID-19 restrictions allow it. Angelo Axe House, 2110 West Beauregard Avenue, will have 5 stations with 2 throwing boards that can fit up to 12 people, and a 6th station with 3 boards fitting up to 15 people. Owners of the house are Tiffany Nelson, Cody Nelson, Jennifer Baker, and Cody Helton. "We like going out and traveling, so we decided we should bring something here to San Angelo," Tiffany said. "We have all been axe throwing and knew there wasn't anything like it here, so we decided to open this up." The house will be open from 6 to 10 p.m. Wednesday through Thursday, 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. on Friday, noon to 12 a.m. Saturday, and noon to 8 p.m. Sunday. Upon checking in, customers will sign a liability waiver, then will proceed to a station where a coach will instruct everyone how to throw an axe. Participants must be age 8 and older. 2 people will throw at the same time, 3 times in a row. "We play games of point systems," Tiffany said. "We will have regulars who will probably do their own thing, but for the first-timers, we will teach them some games, explain everything, and have some fun." Customers will play and pay by the hour. Per person, it's $22.50 every hour. If someone doesn't want to play that next hour and just sit, then it's $10 to hang out and hold your spot, Tiffany said. The house will have a BYOB policy for beer and wine, but will also serve soft drinks and snacks. There will be a children's station with a safer version of the game as well, as Jenga and Cornhole. With any sport, there is always a risk, but we will have coaches on every lane teaching people how to do it, Tiffany said. If you do what you're supposed to do, then you'll be fine. That's what our coaches are going to implement, making sure everyone stays safe. The owners said they are planning to open within the next couple of weeks. We don't have an exact date yet because we don't want to announce something, then immediately retract it, Tiffany said. It will be here very soon. The owners also said they will never have over 100 people in the house at one time. Therefore, they will not have to require their customers wear masks, per the city of San Angelo's recent order. The staff will be wearing masks, but we won't require them, Tiffany said. People can wear them if they want. We will always follow any standards from the city for business. Tiffany said they will be cleaning regularly and are already setting up for social distancing. We didn't plan to set up for social distancing. That's just how it ended up being laid out. San Angelo man pleads guilty after company Easter egg hunt leads to child porn, by Elena Edgen. A San Angelo man who texted child pornography to a fellow employee during a company Easter egg hunt in 2018 has been sentenced to jail Wednesday. At 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 1st, Jaime Mystic and several court officials attended a plea hearing through Zoom in which he pleaded guilty to possession of child pornography. 391st District Court Judge Brad Goodwin accepted the state's recommendation of sentencing Mystic to 4 years in jail with no restitution or fine. The meeting lasted around 15 minutes. The State of Texas versus Jaime Mystic. Employees of a San Angelo business searched for Easter eggs on March 28, 2018 to win gift certificates. If an employee found an egg, they needed to take a picture of themselves holding the egg and text it to the employee in charge of the hunt, records state. Mystic and another employee found an egg and texted a photo of them with the egg. Mystic also sent several photos of naked girls along with the egg photo, according to court documents. The employee in charge of the hunt met with police, who then investigated the images and cell phone number, which belonged to Mystic. Mystic was arrested March 28th on suspicion of possession of child pornography and possession with intent to promote child pornography. An indictment filed September 5th, 2019, charged with him with suspicion of possessing child pornography. Tom Green County crash ends in one death after stop sign disregarded near wall, by Elena Edgen. A Menard woman has died after a Tuesday morning crash near wall, according to a crash report from the Texas Department of Public Safety. At 10:24 a.m. Tuesday, June 30th, several first responders arrived at a crash about 6 miles northeast of wall. A preliminary crash investigation revealed that a 2019 Jeep Cherokee, driven by Alita Constancia Ramon, 71, of Menard, was driving north on Farm to Market Road 2334. A 2017 Ford F-250 was heading west on Farm to Market 765, according to the report. The Jeep disregarded a stop sign and was struck by the Ford. Both vehicles rolled multiple times before stopping in a field north of Farm to Market 765, according to the report. Ramon was declared dead at the crash by Justice of the Peace J.P. McGuire. The driver of the Ford, a 52-year-old man from Miller's View, was transported to Community Medical Center with non-incapacitating injuries, according to DPS. San Angelo mother of slain toddler asks court to rule Texas death penalty unconstitutional, by John Tufts. A defense attorney for Leslie Renee Moreno Fernandez filed 7 court motions earlier this month, among them that the 391st District Court consider declaring the death penalty in Texas unconstitutional. Fernandez is facing capital murder charges after San Angelo police and firefighters found her toddler son unconscious in his crib. An autopsy report later declared 21-month-year-old Nathan Quezada died from trauma. Police arrested Leslie Fernandez and Andrew Andy Fernandez in February 2019 in connection to Quezada's March 2018 death. In Texas, the slaying of a child younger than 10 is a capital murder offense. In April 2019, 51st District Attorney Allison Palmer notified the court of the state's intention to seek the death penalty against Andrew Fernandez. Court documents do not show that the state is seeking the death penalty against Leslie Fernandez as of Tuesday, June 30th. Defense attorney argues death penalty is racist in its application. On June 15th, defense attorney Jenny Henley, along with co-counsel Evan Pierce Jones, filed several motions on behalf of Leslie Fernandez, also known as Leslie Moreno, according to online court documents. In addition to requesting all 911 phone calls, witness statements, and body camera footage from when the police arrived at the Fernandez residence to find Quezada unresponsive, Henley also submitted pretrial motion number 15, asking the court to declare the death penalty unconstitutional. Henley took aim at the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure itself and stated Article 37.071, which outlines how verdicts are determined in a capital murder trial, failed to adequately protect Texans against the discriminatory, arbitrary, and capricious application of the death penalty. In Texas, if a person accused of capital murder is found guilty, a separate hearing will be held to determine whether that person receives the death penalty or life in prison. During this second hearing, prosecutors can introduce any matter that the court deems relevant to sentence, including evidence of the defendant's background or character, according to Article 37.071. Henley took several issues in how jurors determine if a guilty person will receive the death penalty, and argued the process itself was inherently stacked against the defendant. Article 37 is impermissibly vague and devoid of any objective standards to guide the jury in its decision whether or not to apply the death penalty in a particular case in violation of the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution, Henley wrote. She stated Article 37.071 also prevented a jury from hearing evidence that the administration of the death penalty could be partially based on race, ethnic background, gender, and socioeconomic status. Without citing specific examples, Henley stated the death penalty was racist in its application and violated the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which protects citizens from cruel and unusual punishment. Henley's arguments echo similar ones made before the U.S. Supreme Court. In the 1972 case of Furman v. Georgia, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 decision to suspend the death penalty, citing the laws guiding its application violated the Eighth Amendment. 4 years later, the Supreme Court reinstated the death penalty in Gregg v. Georgia, Jurek v. Texas, and Profit v. Florida, also known as the Gregg decision. Defense attorney argues death penalty unfair to Leslie Fernandez due to intellectual disabilities. Henley concluded her arguments by asking the court to declare the death penalty unconstitutional against Fernandez on the basis of her intellectual disabilities, according to the motion. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 2002 that individuals with an intellectual disability are constitutionally protected from receiving the death penalty. After Florida decided an IQ score of 70 or below demonstrated intellectual disability, the Supreme Court ruled that because IQ scores contain a margin of error, states must consider other factors in determining intellectual disability in death penalty cases. Intellectual disability is not a number, Hanley wrote, and argued the court should consider not only Fernandez's IQ score, but her academic record as well. Though her IQ may be close to but above 70, this court should also look at Fernandez's record of academic failure, the fact that she did not finish school, along with the history of childhood abuse and suffering, and must follow the guidelines of the medical community where trauma experiences are counted as risk factors for intellectual disability, according to the motion. As of 4 p.m. Tuesday, June 30th, online court documents do not show the next time Leslie Fernandez will make an appearance in court. The state of Texas versus Andrew Andy Fernandez and Leslie Renee Moreno Fernandez. 3 months shy of his second birthday, 21-month-year-old Nathan Quezada was found unconscious in a home around 5:35 a.m. March 8, 2018. Police and firefighters arrived in the 2600 block of Junius Street for the report of an unconscious child. The boy's stepfather, Andrew Andy Fernandez, told investigators he found Quezada in the child's crib taking short breaths and called 911 before starting CPR. Medics transported the child to the hospital where he died. "I acted to protect my son," he said in an earlier interview with the Standard Times. "Who wouldn't try saving their kid? We love our kids and we are innocent." An autopsy listed the toddler's cause of death as multiple vertical fractures due to blunt impact trauma. "These fractures occurred at different times," reports state. The findings included 3 vertebral fractures in the boy's mid and lower back, swelling of his brain, along with bleeding near his spine and bruises. The autopsy also revealed a previously healed fracture of the boy's left leg. The preliminary autopsy stated the injuries were caused by assault and the manner of death was homicide. A full autopsy, issued 2 days later, changed the manner of death to pending investigation. Nathan Quezada had developmental delays with motor and language skills, according to a clinical history in the full autopsy. Andrew Fernandez said Quezada had meetings with early childhood intervention services 3 times a week. Quezada had a checkup March 5th that showed he was not gaining weight or height, he said. A pediatric radiologist suggested Quezada had osteopenia or low bone density. San Angelo detective Roger Spearman later testified in court that due to the possibility of Quezada having osteopenia, coupled with an inconclusive CT scan, police did not have probable cause to charge Fernandez with abuse. That changed on February 28, 2019, when San Angelo police arrested Andrew and Leslie Moreno Fernandez on suspicion of capital murder of a child younger than 10 years old, a first-degree felony charge punishable by 5 to 99 years or death. Their bonds were set at $1 million. Both remained in Tom Green County Jail as of Tuesday. Leslie Fernandez appeared in court in February 2020 in hopes of reducing her $1 million bond. A judge denied the request. Voting in San Angelo and Tom Green County. Important dates and other information. From staff reports. Voters participating in the Democratic primary, including those in Tom Green County, will decide the outcome in 2 statewide races. State Senator Royce West, Democrat, Dallas, is facing decorated Air Force veteran M.J. Hagar in the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate seat. Whoever wins will go on to face U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Republican, Texas, in the fall. The other statewide Democratic primary runoff is for a seat on the Texas Railroad Commission, a regulatory agency that oversees the oil and natural gas industry. That election includes Roberto R. Beto Alonso against Krista Castaneda. The winner will face Jim Wright, who upset incumbent Ryan Sitton during the Republican primary. Early voting started June 29th. Voters who cast ballots in the Republican primary in March cannot cross parties and vote in the Democratic primary runoff, and vice versa. But if you didn't vote in the March primary, you can still vote in the primary runoffs. Here's a rundown of information you need to cast your ballot in Tom Green County. You can check if you're registered to vote at the Texas Secretary of State website at teamrvmvp.sos.texas.gov/MVP/MVP.do. Note, the site will ask to verify information such as name, date of birth, and county of residence. Where and when to cast ballot during early voting. Early voting is available at the elections office on the first floor of the Keys Building, 113 West Beauregard Avenue, during the following times: June 29th through July 2nd, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. July 5th, 12:30 to 5:30 p.m. July 6th through the 10th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Note to voters, people who prefer a paper ballot will need to vote early, as all Election Day voting will be done electronically at 19 voting centers. Election Day voting hours and locations. Voting will be available from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. at any of these voting centers July 14th. Angelo Bible Church, 3506 Sherwood Way. Belmore Baptist Church, 1214 South Bell Street. Calvary Baptist Church, 2401 Armstrong Street. Christoval Community Center, 20022 Main Street, Christoval. Celebration Church, 2639 Sunset Drive. Concho Valley Transport District Depot, 506 North Chadburn Street. First Assembly of God, 1442 Edmond Boulevard. Great Creek Community Center, 8207 U.S. 87 Great Creek. Keating Paint and Body Shop, 5050 North Chadburn Street. MHMR Administration Building, 1501 West Beauregard Avenue. Paul Ann Baptist Church, 2531 Smith Boulevard. Plaza del Sol 2 Apartments, 4359 Oak Grove Boulevard. Southgate Church of Christ, 528 Country Club Road. Segunda Iglesia Bautista, 530 West Avenue T. St. Ambrose Catholic Church in Wall, 8602 Loop 570. TxDOT Headquarters, 4502 Knickerbocker Road, Building E. Very Best Baptist Church, 50 Farm to Market Road, 2334 Very Best. Wesley Trinity United Methodist, 301 West 18th Street. Voter ID requirements. Texas is one of 31 states that require photo identification when voting. Acceptable IDs include Texas driver's license issued by the Texas Department of Public Safety, Texas election identification certificate issued by the DPS, Texas personal identification card issued by DPS, Texas license to carry a handgun issued by DPS, U.S. military identification card containing the person's photograph, U.S. citizenship certificate containing the person's photograph, U.S. passport. Registered voters who can't meet any of the photo ID requirements can still vote by signing a declaration stating their identity and that they have a reasonable impediment or difficulty for having an accepted photo ID. They may also provide one of the following documents: valid voter registration certificate, certified birth certificate, must be an original, copy or original current utility bill, copy of or original bank statement, copy of or original government check, copy of or original paycheck, copy of or original government document with their name and address, original required if it contains a photograph. If you have questions about your voter registration status or acceptable forms of ID, call the elections office at 325-659-6541. Healthcare resources expand in San Angelo, by Colin Murphy. Healthcare resources are expanding in San Angelo after the new Office of Texas Home Health celebrated the opening of its facility on Tuesday. Texas Home Health specializes in providing in-home healthcare services and hospice end-of-life care to patients across Texas, but until recently did not have a presence in San Angelo. Executive Director Javin Mitchell said the facility intends to provide patients with a comprehensive level of in-home health care. There are personal care services that do some of the things that we do, but we like to look at we do as the whole nine yards, Mitchell said. We take care of bathing, medication reminders, meal preparation, and house cleaning. We are not going to tell anyone we can't do this or that. We go the extra mile. We set ourselves up as something different. We don't just work with the patient, we care for the patient and their extended family. Mitchell also said his own background will play a significant factor in how the Texas home health model of care will be adapted to the local community. I was a sergeant in the military for 6 years, so the veteran population is close and dear to my heart, Mitchell said. So I want to be in a position to not only take care of the elderly and anyone else who needs it, but also the veteran population. We don't look at it as a business. We are just here to help and care for the ones who paved the way for me. San Angelo State Park is closed after employee tests positive for COVID-19, from staff reports. San Angelo State Park is closed until July 8th after a person at the park tested positive for the coronavirus. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Department has learned that an individual at San Angelo State Park has tested positive for COVID-19. At this time, out of an abundance of caution, the park will close and will reopen for overnight and day use reservations on July 8, 2020, said a statement from the park on social media. On Tuesday, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department confirmed the positive test was for a park employee. The individual was quarantined for 14 days after receiving a presumed positive diagnosis. The park closure dates were adjusted due to availability of staff needed to operate the park, a spokesperson for the department said. San Angelo Early Childhood Center closes due to COVID-19 exposure outside daycare, by John Tufts. A spokesperson for the San Angelo Early Childhood Center, 619 Julian Street, said its daycare services would be suspended after a staff member reported a close relative had contracted COVID-19 and was hospitalized. Officials with the daycare center said the decision to close was due also to two parents and one child waiting for coronavirus test results, according to a social media post. "We decided to close for 2 weeks out of an abundance of caution," said Executive Director Cynthia Lackey. "We have had two parents and several family members of children tested last week, and we hope that closing for 2 weeks will keep the spread out of our center." On June 26th, the San Angelo Early Childhood Center issued a statement on their official web Facebook page. "I am sorry to have to tell you that we are closing for 2 weeks beginning June 26th. One of our staff members' mother has been diagnosed with COVID-19 and is in the hospital. We also have two parents and one child waiting for results. We want to keep everyone safe, so we will be cleaning. More information on the note at the center. Please come get your child and their belongings as soon as you can. When parents picked up their children, we sent their belongings home with them. Blankets, extra clothing, open formula, silly cups, but kept their unused formula and extra diapers," Lackey said. "Tuition will be waived for children enrolled at the daycare for the 2 weeks it remains closed, and staff will be paid their regular hours," according to Lackey. "We are thankful that we took the precaution of closing because one of our cases has come back as positive," Lackey said. the case in question had not been inside the center since June 19th, as we do not allow anyone to attend or work for 72 hours if they are sneezing, coughing, or running a temperature. Lackey said the daycare has asked families to continue to social distance, wear a mask, and avoid large gatherings while the center has contracted with a professional cleaning service to disinfect the building. Officials with the daycare center announced they were seeking guidance from the Texas Health and Human Services Commission before reopening. San Angelo police seize about 50 grams of cocaine and firearm during search, by Rosanna Aguilera. The San Angelo Police Department seized about 50 grams of cocaine while executing a search warrant in the 25,000 block of Sweetbriar Drive on Friday, June 26th, according to a police news release. The warrant was issued because a man was suspected to be in possession of a controlled substance at the residence. Investigators also found drug paraphernalia associated with drug trafficking, along with a firearm. Dexter Lewis, 29, was charged with manufacture or delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony. San Angelo Simply Texas Blues Festival canceled for 2020, by Rosanna Aguilera. The San Angelo 12th Annual Simply Texas Blues Festival has been canceled due to recent mandates by Governor Greg Abbott and city officials meant to curb the spread of the coronavirus. The San Angelo Blues Society announced Saturday, June 27th, that its funds and energy would be better spent on next year's festival. We sincerely appreciate the support we've received for this event and its proposed changes, according to a Facebook post. To the vendors and the sponsors, we ask you to hang with us. The Society will be refunding any payments made by vendors and music contestants. The safety and well-being of our entire community is very important, and we strive to hold events that are good for our community, the post stated. We're keeping the blues alive. Any updates about upcoming events will be posted on the Society's Facebook page at facebook.com/SimplyTexasBluesFestival/posts. Angelo State announces virtual graduation ceremony in August, by Rosanna Aguilera. Angelo State University announced the commencement ceremony for spring and summer graduates on August 15th will be virtual rather than in person. Angie Wright, interim president, and Don Topliff, provost and vice president for academic affairs, sent a letter to graduates with the news. "We know you wanted the opportunity to physically walk across the stage in the Janelle Center and receive your diploma in front of the friends and family that have supported you, along with the faculty and staff that helped you reach this pinnacle," the letter stated. "We sincerely wish that could have happened. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, ASU has determined it cannot safely hold the ceremony on campus without undue risk to attendees and staff. We will do our very best to make it a meaningful ceremony celebrating your achievements," according to the letter. "We are working on the details right now, and we will keep you updated as plans are put into place." Tips for successful landscaping during summer in West Texas, by Allison Watkins. Summer is the toughest time of year on most landscape plants, and we have a long summer. The hot, dry weather creates a harsh environment. With some knowledge and practice, however, the home landscape can survive the summer and can even look beautiful and be functional without wasting water or resources. Here are my top tips for successful landscaping in West Texas. First, give plants what they want. This might sound obvious, but it's the number one most important tip. And it's more about choosing the right plant to match local environment and conditions, instead of trying to change the environment to match a certain plant. Plant labels don't give much info, so it's important to choose carefully. Ask for recommendations from local nurseries. Use the plant selector tool at earth-kind.tamu.edu and do some research to discover what plants will do well in the amount of sun, type of soil, etc. in your yard. the zone number on the label only refers to winter hardiness, not heat tolerance or any of the other equally important considerations. Train plants to have deeper roots. No matter how much you water, if plants have shallow roots, they will suffer when it gets over 100 degrees. To encourage deep roots, prepare soil when planting new plants by loosening it up and incorporating compost. After they are established, gradually adjust irrigation timing until they are watered as infrequently as possible. Deep but infrequent irrigation promotes healthy, deep root systems and helps plants survive summer heat. Turf grass doesn't have to be an enemy to an earth-kind, water-conserving landscape, but does require more effort and water than most other landscape plants. So consider limiting turf grass to the minimum you need and incorporate ground cover, perennials, hardscape, and other landscape features. As I heard someone once say, if the only time you walk on it is when you mow it, you probably don't need it. Mulch makes a big difference all year round, but summer is when it really helps with water needs. A thick 3 to 4 inch deep layer of mulch will shade the soil, prevent water from evaporating, and reduce weeds. It truly helps plants endure heat. When irrigating plants, be as efficient as possible. Use drip irrigation everywhere you can, and make sure spray heads are not missing or misaligned and spraying the street. Do an in-depth irrigation audit each year to make sure the system is in good working order, and do a quick check every few weeks to observe it running to catch any obvious problems. It might seem impossible to have a beautiful yard in West Texas without an enormous water bill, but it can be done. It might take a little more effort in the beginning, but a well-planned landscape can be low maintenance and drought tolerant, as well as functional and attractive. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu. Thank you for joining us for the reading of the San Angelo Standard-Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.